Robinhood Radio presents Your Health with osteopathic physician Dr. Kim Tripp, a show presented monthly on Robinhood Radio, discussing the challenges faced and the solutions that are available for keeping vital health and well-being throughout our lives. And now, here's Dr. Tripp.
Hi there, everyone. Welcome to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp, osteopathic physician. This is the health show created to bring you vital information and discussion of all sorts of health issues on your mind and in your life from the unique perspective of traditional osteopathic medicine. So first, as we always do for new listeners, let's clarify what osteopathic medicine means. Osteopathic medicine is practiced by fully licensed physicians in the United States with a DO degree, a Doctor of Osteopathic Medicine degree. Our practice is based on the essential relationship in all living things between structure and function. In other words, the natural interdependence between anatomy and physiology, or between the physics of the body and its chemistry. As osteopathic physicians, we use our comprehensive and precisely detailed knowledge of anatomy and physiology to promote health and healing in our patients. We work gently with our hands to help your body restore optimal function based on optimal structure. Our medical specialty is therefore called osteopathic manual medicine. We receive uniquely in-depth training in anatomy and physiology and their relationship within your body in the context of a full physician's medical training. Only U.S.-trained osteopaths are fully licensed physicians and have all of the current medical pharmacopoeia, nutritional science, and full medical training at our disposal. This means that your individual treatment may include a wide range of approaches, but will always be founded on our gentle hands-on work. We practice from the unique perspective of first looking for the health in our patients rather than merely finding illness and disease. Our practice has been especially effective for, but not limited to, musculoskeletal and other structural issues, as well as chronic headache, gastrointestinal problems, post-concussion syndrome, sleep disturbance, allergies, and many, many other health issues. We work together with you, the patient, to help you build health and vitality in your body, mind, and spirit as the solution for health problems, rather than only treating the disease symptoms. So in the radio show, we tackle health issues from this point of view. What can we do to help you build your health and vitality in order to prevent and heal injuries and disease? And we do that by giving you some basic information about the problem to help you understand what's happening, as well as offer solutions and guidance for helping you to heal and stay healthy based on our clinical experience with patients in our practice. Before we get started on today's topic, let me just remind you that you can listen to all of our prior Your Health shows online at your convenience, such as the shows on back pain, nutrition, carpal tunnel, concussion, etc., by going to Robinhood Radio's website, then the on-demand section, then scroll all the way down and select the Your Health shows, then you can pick the individual show by topic. It's a great convenience. Well, today we are going to continue our explanation of the extraordinary and very complex gastrointestinal system and its common problems. In the four past shows on this huge multi-organ system, we reviewed the basic anatomy, physiology, and functional roles of all the organs and other systems involved with normal digestion, as well as giving an overview of the fascinating gut microflora, that is, the friendly bacteria that live in our guts and help with so many aspects of our health. We also started our exploration of common GI problems with a generalized list of what problems can develop throughout the system, followed by a more detailed discussion of peptic ulcers, hiatal hernia, and GERD. You will likely want to listen to the earlier shows to have all that material in mind before moving on to the problems discussed today. I do want to review the basic symptoms of general GI problems again today. The first sign of problems in the digestive tract can include one or more of the following symptoms: belly pain, difficulty swallowing, heartburn, aka acid reflux or GERD, nausea and or vomiting, bloating, constipation, diarrhea, red blood in the stool from bleeding in the colon or rectum, black tarry stools, indicative of bleeding in the upper GI system, for example, in the stomach, incontinence of the bowel and or unintended weight gain or loss. These symptoms can each be associated with one or more of the many potential GI problems, from minor to life-threatening, which is why it is so very important to have any new gut symptoms evaluated right away by a physician, and in some cases by a physician who is also a gastrointestinal specialist, called a gastroenterologist. Today, we're going to tackle a set of common intestinal issues. We will work through a summarized introduction to irritable bowel syndrome, inflammatory bowel disease, including Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis, diverticulitis, and small intestine bacterial overgrowth. That's a lot more than it sounds like, so we'd better jump right in and start with irritable bowel syndrome, aka IBS. Irritable bowel syndrome is a modern, chronic affliction of the colon and sometimes small intestine without a clear cause. It's quite common in the Western world, more frequently seen in women than men, and most often initiating in young adults in their 40s. Abdominal pain is the key symptom of irritable bowel syndrome, and it's generally associated with either diarrhea or constipation, although these can alternate or shift predominantly from constipation to diarrhea and vice versa. Other common symptoms of IBS include bloating, a sensation of fullness in the belly, with or without cramping, urgency, the need to use the restroom in a hurry, mucus in the stool, whitish or yellowish liquid, and the sensation of incompletely passing stools. Unlike the similarly named inflammatory bowel disease, IBD, including ulcerative colitis and Crohn's, IBS does not generally cause damage to the gut itself, nor predispose to cancer. It is largely an issue with abnormal motility of the gut, i.e., the movement of food through the entire gut and its elimination, either being too rapid and exaggerated, leading to repeat bouts of diarrhea with cramping, or too slow and reduced with bloating and constipation. And the symptoms can alternate between these two expressions of the problem, or shift to be primarily one or the other, and then change to be the other. For this reason, patients can be prescribed medications that treat those symptoms, such as antispasmodic, antidiarrheal medicines, or laxatives. These meds can be useful to help you get through the day, but they're not getting at the root cause of the problem. The root cause of the problem, in a general sense, is a dysfunction of the autonomic nervous system, which works with the brain and gut to control gut function and motility, as we've discussed in depth in prior shows. Exactly why this GI dysautonomia develops is the big question around IBS. There appear to be a number of possible triggers for IBS, although there have been no conclusive research studies. They are stress of any kind, emotional, physical, immune, dietary triggers, hormonal changes, and trauma, physical or emotional. These have all been associated with the onset or exacerbation of irritable bowel syndrome. These make sense when you think about the fact that the autonomic nervous system is involved, and anything that imbalances our autonomic nervous system function, like severe trauma with resulting hyperactivity of the sympathetic nervous system that shuts down the gut, could be involved with IBS. Sometimes there are dietary triggers as well, and work with an elimination diet, in other words, returning to pure whole foods, can identify what the trigger foods are and help to restore normal gut function. Given the compromised nature of most commercially available foods these days in the United States, it's not surprising that there is a dietary relationship often with IBS. Healing IBS that is not caused by another disease process usually takes a comprehensive approach involving osteopathic work, nutrition and diet changes, exercise, and real commitment to life change. But it can be done, and it's worth it. Well, now let's move on to a potentially more life-threatening illness, inflammatory bowel disease, including Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, in other words, IBD. Inflammatory bowel disease is exactly as it's named. It is a disease of the colon and/or the small intestine, which causes chronic inflammation of the involved gut tissues that can lead to swelling, bleeding, erosion, dysfunction, and, if not controlled, can potentially contribute to development of cancer in the affected tissues. Both Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis usually involve severe diarrhea, pain, fatigue, and weight loss. IBD can be associated with symptoms throughout the rest of the body, as well as the gut symptoms, and can be severely debilitating, sometimes leading to life-threatening complications. Crohn's disease is an inflammatory bowel disease that causes inflammation of the lining of your digestive tract. In Crohn's disease, inflammation often spreads deep into the affected tissues. The inflammation can involve different areas of the digestive tract, the large intestine, small intestine, or both. Ulcerative colitis causes long-lasting inflammation and sores, ulcers, in the innermost lining of your large intestine, the colon, and the rectum, with severe and frequent diarrhea and bleeding from the colon and rectum. Collagenous colitis and lymphocytic colitis also are considered inflammatory bowel diseases, but they're usually regarded separately from classic inflammatory bowel disease. It is unclear exactly what causes inflammatory bowel disease. There appears to be an autoimmune component to IBD. Normally, the immune system protects the body from infections caused by viruses or undesirable bacteria in the gut. Remember, there are vast numbers of beneficial bacteria in the gut. Once the infection has been cleared, the normal gut immune system then calms down and returns to baseline monitoring. But with IBD, the immune system seems to overreact to normal bacteria in the digestive tract, and once it starts working, the immune system fails to autoregulate and damp down again. This causes the inflammation, which damages the digestive tract and leads to the symptoms. Inflammatory bowel disease can run in families, and certain genes may cause the immune system to be capable of overreacting, leading to IBD. Stress and certain foods can make IBD symptoms worse, but they don't seem to be the initiating cause of inflammatory bowel disease. IBD can cause a number of problems outside the digestive tract, as we mentioned earlier, including arthritis and joint pain, anemia from GI tissue bleeding, then leading to fatigue, weak bones and bone breaks, inflammation in the eye and other eye problems, liver inflammation, gallstones, red bumps and ulcers on the skin, kidney stones, delayed puberty and growth problems in children and teens, and in rare cases, lung problems. Some of these issues are caused by poor absorption of nutrients. Others are due to inflammation in parts of the body other than the digestive tract. Treatments for inflammatory bowel disease can include osteopathic manual medicine, dietary changes and nutritional supplements, reducing stress and getting enough rest, pharmaceutical medications, and in severe cases, surgery. Most people with IBD take some medications to control their symptoms. If the medicines don't control their symptoms and disease, ultimately, some people may need surgery. IBD is a complex medical challenge and requires the attention of a gastroenterologist. And as a reminder, any extensive GI bleeding is a medical emergency and requires a call to 911. And speaking of medical emergencies, let's move on to diverticulitis, another inflammatory disease. Diverticulitis is inflammation, usually but not always, combined with infection of the diverticula of the colon. What? All right. Most of our colons develop diverticula with age. These are small, harmless outpouchings of the wall, like little cul-de-sacs, from many years of pressure on the walls of the colon during evacuation. More commonly occurring in people with diets that lean more towards processed foods and meats, and less so in people with diets leaning more toward moisture and fiber-rich foods like vegetables. Having diverticula is called diverticulosis. Diverticulosis, or having some diverticula, themselves is not necessarily problematic, but if the diverticula become obstructed or swollen, they can become inflamed and/or harbor infection, or even become ischemic, meaning the blood flow to those specific tissues is obstructed. All of these lead to diverticulitis. Itis, of course, means inflammation of. Diverticulitis can cause severe abdominal pain and tenderness, often in the left lower part of your abdomen, as well as fever, nausea, and a marked change in your bowel habits. Mild diverticulitis can be treated with rest, changes in your diet, and sometimes antibiotics. Severe or recurring diverticulitis may require surgery and can be a medical emergency. Always get medical attention for abdominal pain. And finally, let's spend a little time on another relatively recently developed diagnosis: small intestine bacterial overgrowth, otherwise known as SIBO. This is a condition in which high numbers of undesirable bacteria grow in the small intestine. The small intestine does not support the same numbers of beneficial bacteria as the colon, although they are there. Sometimes large numbers of less than beneficial bacteria or very high numbers of beneficial bacteria can build up in the small intestine. When there are too many bacteria in the small intestine itself, these organisms use up the nutrients that would otherwise be absorbed into the body. A person with small bowel bacterial overgrowth may become malnourished as a result. The breakdown of nutrients in the small intestine by the excess bacteria can also damage the intestinal lining. This can make it even harder for the body to absorb the nutrients. Conditions that can lead to overgrowth of bacteria in the small intestine include complications of diseases or surgery that create pouches or blockages in the small intestine. Crohn's disease is actually one of these conditions. Diseases that lead to movement problems in the small bowel, such as diabetes or scleroderma. Immunodeficiency, such as AIDS, or immunoglobulin deficiency. Short bowel syndrome, caused by surgical removal of part of the small intestine. Small bowel diverticulosis, in which the small cul-de-sacs occur in the inner lining of the small intestine. These sacs can allow too many bacteria to grow. Surgical procedures that create a loop of small intestine where excess bacteria can grow. An example is a Billroth II type of stomach removal, a gastrectomy. And some cases of irritable bowel syndrome can ultimately lead to SIBO. SIBO can come on gradually or suddenly, and symptoms can be confusing. Common SIBO symptoms include abdominal fullness, cramps and pain, gas and bloating, diarrhea, which is usually watery, and rarely fatty stool and weight loss. There are very specific tests to determine if SIBO is the problem. Your gastroenterologist can do these tests for you. How do we treat SIBO? The priority is to treat the cause of the bacterial overgrowth. Treatment most often consists of antibiotics and can be in combination with probiotics. In some cases, drugs that speed intestinal motility are useful. A low-carbohydrate diet is often important because it deprives the bacteria of easy nutrition. Treatment also requires getting enough fluids and adequate high-quality nutrition. it is important to consider how the bacterial imbalance may have been initiated in order to restore normal gut flora and prevent future occurrences of gut flora imbalance as well. Which brings me back to osteopathy and the close of today's show here with a reminder that a good osteopathic physician who is a specialist in osteopathic manual medicine can be especially helpful for gastrointestinal issues of all kinds. Working gently with our hands, with the involved organs, nerves, vasculature, fascias, capsules, and associated tissues to release restrictions in the physical tissues of the gut organs, the diaphragm, and blood and lymphatic flow, as well as to help balance the autonomic nervous system function based on anatomical detail, and to help with nutritional issues and support for whatever procedures you may be going through. Recall that all of the gastrointestinal tract is a complex physical entity with connections between all the parts that need to be open, flexible, and moving freely with excellent neural conduction from the cranial nerves that control the gut, optimal arterial and venous blood flow, and lymphatic drainage to remain healthy, vital, and functioning normally. And now I seem to have run out of time again. I always do that. Thank you so much for your attention to Your Health with Dr. Kim Tripp. Remember, you can email your comments and suggestions for topics to yourhealth@robinhoodradio.com. If you have a health issue yourself and would like to find out about how we might be able to help you in our practice of traditional osteopathy, we are at our offices in Sharon, Connecticut, Dr. Kim Tripp and Dr. Andrew Goldman, Goldman Tripp Osteopathic Healthcare, 860-364-5990, Monday to Friday, 8:45 a.m. to 5 p.m., with evening hours on Wednesdays and Fridays, or on the web at www.goldmantripp.net. I'll be looking forward to being with you next time, every other Friday at 12:30 and Sundays at 5:30. Meanwhile, you take care of yourself, enjoy your health, and thank you for listening.